Hear that? Believe it or not, summer is just around the corner. Luckily, Armor All, America's most trusted auto appearance brand, has what your car needs to get that perfect summer shine. Plus, now through May 31st, we'll give you $5 for every $20 you spend on Armor All products. That means car wash pods, protectant, tire shine, you name it. Find out how to get your $5 rebate at ArmorAll.com. Armor All. Less work, more clean. Terms apply.
On a mixtape just around the corner, did a lot in California. Can't wait to drop this, don't you? Yeah, they gon' have fun with that. Smash like song.
Hey everybody, welcome back to the podcast. It is always up to speed with Formula One. Today is Thursday, March 28th, 2024. My name is Mark Daly, sitting here on the cusp of a long weekend and just looking outside the window here in the studio. It is wet, it is rainy, it is damp, it is cold, which is entirely on brand for a long weekend in the middle of spring in Vancouver, Canada. But hey, I'll take the 4 days off. No complaints there. I'll find something to do, even if the weather is not conducive to going outdoors. But hey, I don't mind the rain actually, so I'll probably go outside and do something active, even if it means I'm going to get a little bit wet doing so. Anyways, before we get into the show tonight, just want to give a quick shout out to the Race Weekend magazine. You can check them out at theraceweekend.com, and that is Race Weekend, spelled RACEWKND.com. Use my promo code ScuderiaPod at checkout to save 10% on a 1 year subscription. Also, head on over to racingexclusives.com for our unique Formula One merchandise and memorabilia that comes with a certificate of authenticity, and check them out at racingexclusives.com. Okay, going to jump right into it tonight. So we're going to get right into the, right into the meat of this show. Sure, why not? Let's call it that. Before we do so, let's give a little bit of a reminder as to the top five in the 2024 Formula One World Drivers' Championship. On top, we have Max Verstappen with 51 points from three races. Charles Leclerc from Ferrari is second with 47. Sergio Perez from Red Bull, third in the championship with 46 points. Carlos Sainz from Ferrari, fourth with 40 points. And Oscar Piastri, the young Australian driver from McLaren, is currently fifth in the Drivers' Championship with 28 points. On the Constructors' side, we have Red Bull leading the way with 97 points from three races. Ferrari second with 93 points, so pretty close at the top of the Constructors' Championship after three Grand Prix. Third is McLaren with 55. Mercedes fourth with 26. And then fifth is Aston Martin with 25 points. And then we have Racing Bulls, or whatever we're calling them, Haas, Williams, Sauber, and Alpine. So Williams, Sauber, and Alpine are the three out of the 10 teams that have not scored a single point so far in the championship this year. Okay, while we do this, I'm just going to load the fantasy standings. And while I wait for those to load, it loaded pretty quick this evening, which is really nice. Just going to go down the top five here. We've had staying steady at the top, Kerry Duro F1 with 724 points. Moving up in the second place, after the Australian Grand Prix, is the Red Beards with 708 points. Only 2 points ahead of DJ Bean in third. Dropping down into fourth is Hamilton 8-time champions with 659 points. And then moving up into fifth after three races is Tails I Win with 656 points. So the censors, as I mentioned the other day, have been in and have wiped the name of Scuderia F1 Podcast from the fantasy league. So now we've got some ridiculously long numeric name instead, but I guess we're forever league 17106414298554. Just rolls off the tongue, isn't it? And that is just more than a little bit ridiculous. Okay, let's jump right into the news. So Toto Wolff says that a relationship with Max Verstappen needs to happen at a certain stage. And let's not forget, going back nearly a decade at the, towards the end of the Hamilton and Rosberg pairing at Mercedes, Max Verstappen was, even though he was a teenager back then, 16, 17 years old at the time, he was, there was an opportunity for him to join that organization, albeit not in a race capacity, because, I mean, like I say, that was peak Hamilton, peak Rosberg, and, you know, as toxic and nasty as it was, but that was right sort of right in the middle of the Mercedes reign, the peak of their dynasty. So Al Toto had offered Max, reportedly at the time, was a job as a reserve driver. So Max and his team and his dad, Jos, felt that they could do better. They took the opportunity to join the Red Bull organization. And obviously that turned out. Max spent a little bit of time racing for Toro Rosso. And then Danny Kvyat had this really unfortunate habit of driving into other cars from other teams and crashing his own car and doing all sorts of things that are not really useful if you want to maintain a drive in Formula One. He's the driver that really was at, as far as I consider him anyways, the first driver to be at the head of this sort of like revolving door that we've seen at Red Bull and Toro Rosso and AlphaTauri / Racing Bulls over the past decade or so, because after he drove into Sebastian Vettel at the Russian Grand Prix at Sochi that year, he went down to Toro Rosso, Max Verstappen came up, and the rest, as they say, is history. And this is going back to 2016, I should say, and Max winning his first race for a Red Bull at the 2016 Spanish Grand Prix, which was a little bit ironic if he goes to Mercedes eventually to become a driver over there, because that was, I wouldn't say gifted to him. I mean, obviously he had to do all the work to win that race, but that he was the direct beneficiary of Nico Rosberg and Lewis Hamilton crashing into each other at turn three on the opening lap of that race. And just as we've seen, like, the dominance from Red Bull over the past couple of years, I mean, 10 years ago, 8 years ago, that was the peak of the Mercedes dominance. So anybody who was not in a Mercedes in that era definitely need a helper. I mean, doesn't that sound familiar with what we've experienced over the past couple of years with Red Bull up to the top of Formula One? But being as it may, I mean, let's not take away anything from Max, but he was full value for money on that day. And, let's talk about what an amazing career that he's had ever since. Anyway, so obviously Lewis Hamilton has broken ties with Mercedes. He's going to leave at the end of the year. He's going to get Carlos Sainz's seat at Ferrari in 2025. You have to think and you have to admit that even though Mercedes haven't been quite at the same level over the past couple of years as they were in the decade previous, that's still going to be a very, very desirable seat. And Carlos Sainz is only one of a handful of drivers that have been linked with possibly taking over Lewis's seat at Mercedes next year. And so, I mean, I think this is, I think this is natural. I mean, especially with everything, all the turmoil that we've seen at Red Bull over the past couple of months with this whole Lafair, Christian Horner and everything that's be going on around there. But it's you have to think at some point too, maybe Max wants a bit of a different challenge. Perhaps this is just a way to leverage and posture themselves and maybe put pressure internally at Red Bull, because it really sounds that that they want Christian Horner out of there. That is the Verstappen camp, at least. Anyways, Total Wolf was asked this week about that vacant seat next to George Russell and Mercedes in 2025. He said, quote, "We have a slot free, the only one in the top teams. Unless Max decide he goes, then the slot is not going to be free with us anymore," end quote. So that is an interesting little one-liner there. But Toto went on to say that he said that Mercedes will make a decision towards the summer of this year, but that is entirely dependent on what Max does. Anyways, he goes on to talk about Max Verstappen in this interview. He says, quote, "I'd seen him in Formula 3. He was very good. I have a good relationship with his father. So we sat down in my home in Vienna and said, what can we do? I wasn't able to give him a Formula 1 seat. I said, let's do F2 together." So this is actually going back. This is the what I was talking about earlier. So this is back in 2014. So just to go back to the quote, Toto said, quote, "Let's do F2 together, fully funded, and I guarantee you a seat next year in the car." They said, "I have an offer from Red Bull for Toro Rosso, basically from now on." That was it. I knew we wouldn't be able to compete with that. Half into the next season, he replaced Danny Kvyat in Red Bull and took the seat. And, end quote. the rest is history, right? So Toto was asked if perhaps that relationship could kind of like go back, and well, I wouldn't say go completely full circle, but it would be kind of interesting if, you know, now almost a decade later that they would be in this a similar position to offer Max a drive. Toto said, quote, "So it's kind of a relationship that needs to happen at a certain stage, but we don't know when," end quote. So, I mean, the key thing is here that, you know, they've sat down, you know, together, you know, and they talked to each other, you know, way back when, and, you know, they've, you know, maintained these relationships over the years. You know, it's really kind of like tantalizing. I mean, as far as Max is concerned now, that, 26 years old or whatever he is at, you know, right now, I mean, Max Verstappen, he's a three-time world champion. You can kind of, if you're Max right now, I mean, you can almost race with no pressure on you. I mean, you've won the big prize three times in a row. And, you know, if things aren't 100% to your liking at Red Bull, and especially, you know, that he's, you know, stated his concerns that if Helmut Marko goes, if he was to leave, then, you know, he's basically said, well, why would I stick around? And I'm kind of paraphrasing and parsing here, but I mean, why not take on a new challenge? I mean, obviously he has the best car, but to be able to revive the fortunes of Mercedes, you know, maybe that's exactly, you know, something that Max wants to do. Maybe not exactly, but maybe that's a project that he wants to take on and bring that team up. And, you know, maybe that would be a pretty sweet challenge for him now, rather than having the car to dominate Formula One. Because I don't know, I'm not convinced that Max is one of these drivers that is purely in the sport to win and rewrite the record book till he basically takes up every blank spot in there and fills you know, replaces everybody else in the record book with his own name instead. I mean, of course, he's already done that. I mean, look at all the records we talked about over the course of 2023. I mean, it was just ridiculous the amount of records that Max Verstappen broke last year. But, you know, so I mean, there is that part to it, but perhaps, you know, the challenge to go to Mercedes is something that, you know, he might want to do. I mean, he's only one of a couple of drivers that have been linked with that that empty seat. Carlos Sainz, who we're going to talk about a little bit later, is another one. Fernando Alonso is another. So, you know, it's not like it would be without competition. However, having said that, if the price was right, you have to think that out of all the teams on the grid, that Mercedes, much like Ferrari, have very, very deep pockets. And if they wanted to get Max Verstappen in that car, that they would secure the funding to give Max the salary that that he asked for. Because I really don't think that would be the you know, the deal breaker right there. I really think that if they wanted Max there, and Max was not entirely unreasonable with his you know, demands on term and length of contract, I'm sure that they've got the funding and the wherewithal to get it done. So it's going to be very interesting, right? So especially if Max decides to stay put, but if he doesn't, you know, it's going to make things even more interesting depending where he decides to go. And I mean, that would be the obvious destination for Max Verstappen if he's decided he's had enough at Red Bull for one reason or another. But I don't want to completely discount this one. I mean, I think that Max is a pretty loyal driver. I mean, he's already committed a decade of his career and his life to the Red Bull organization for both of their Formula One teams, and he's been obviously very, very successful in you know, during that time. But everybody has their limits. You know, if you know, the Lafayette Christian Horner is you know, perhaps what decide or, you know, pushes Max to move away in the what do you want to call it? The after effects and the what's the other word I'm thinking of? I can't remember. Anyway, so I'll move on. The fallout, that's what it is. Fallout. Why could I guess it's too late in the evening to come up with proper vocabulary is one of it, or perhaps maybe he just wants the challenge. So let's keep an eye on that. I don't think it's necessarily over. You know, perhaps we'll find out later this year, or perhaps it'll never happen, but certainly a fun one to keep an eye on. All right. Moving on to the next story here. So sticking with Mercedes now, actually. So Toto Wolff believes that correlation issues, not what he called dogmatism, is behind the problems and struggles that Mercedes have had. So They've obviously had problems with the cars over the past couple of years. The W13 just was not good. Last year, it wasn't much better. I mean, they kept that zero side pod architecture on the car. The W14 quickly pivoted into, about a third of the way through the season. The car after that got better, but they had porpoising and bouncing problems, and that was going back to 2022. And last year, they had the complaints from Lewis and from George Russell were rear end handling instability. So, they've completely changed the concept for this year, and they've hoped to really develop a car and a platform that was more predictable and consistent. But this year's car, the W15, has also proved a little bit problematic and temperamental, and it hasn't been as smooth of a transition or a switch to a new design that they'd really hoped. Total Wolf was talking about that, but the problems have been highlighted in wind tunnel findings that are not really matching the way that the car behaves out of the wind tunnel, and which is a model, and then on the track in reality. So anyways, Toto went to explain it further by saying, quote, "When I look at the positives, I think we took many potential root causes out of the equation. We weren't sure about our suspension. We weren't sure about the stiffness of our gearbox carrier. We had a vibrating steering rack. All of those things have disappeared. But fundamentally, whatever we see in the tunnel doesn't correlate with what's happening on the track. It's not a single person that says, I would interpret that data in this way, and because of dogmatism, we're not making any progress. I don't see dogmatism. I see an open environment where many people share, where people take themselves by the nose and say, maybe in my area we are making mistakes." Toto goes on to say that that Mercedes has what he calls like a no blame culture, and he goes on to say, quote, "It's tough in my career with in everything I've done before, be it in finance and investment, that you know which screws to turn. Sometimes it takes me back to my Williams days. I knew what was missing, but here I don't think we're missing something. It's just a complication of what's happening with the car, with what we can see. It's like an on-off switch," end quote. So interesting. I mean, he feels that it's like they kind of know what's going on, but he's not really saying too much. It's like he's obviously feels like they have everything there, but it's maybe not the easiest of fixes. And then Mercedes actually been, for me, a little bit kind of frustrating over the past couple of years. Having said that, I wasn't too entirely disappointed that that they weren't in the spotlight and winning all the races. But, after a couple of years of Red Bull and Max dominating Formula One, and, I kind of hope that regardless if it's a Mercedes or Ferrari or McLaren or Red Bull themselves, obviously, or Aston Martin, that somebody's able to step their game up and match them. Because like I say, I mean, ultimately at the end of the year, I don't mind if Max wins the championship or Red Bull win the Constructors' Championship. I just want to see them work a little bit harder for it. I mean, yeah, I guess we were all cheering. Well, those of you who aren't Max Verstappen and Red Bull fans were cheering last weekend when he had that brake problem, that seized brake, which caused fire, or caught fire at the end of, just the first couple of laps of the Australian Grand Prix. But it was a change, but it would have been a lot better if Carlos Sainz or Charles Leclerc was really able to take the fight to Max and beat him fair and square on the track. But hey, it is what it is. We got a different race. We had a different winner up on the podium. Checo was a non-factor, and Red Bull was a bit of a footnote at the Australian Grand Prix, at least on race day. And I mean, of course, there's got to be an asterisk beside that because it was a mechanical issue. It was a reliability thing, but it didn't come at the hands of losing the race to one of their rivals. But we'll talk about it a little bit later. I mean, Ferrari was a lot pacier when they were, even last year. I mean, they did, have some of the speed to match Red Bull towards the end of the year, but weren't actually there to challenge them. Now, it's interesting that if you look at the last couple of seasons, Carlos Sainz is the only non-Red Bull driver to win a race in 2023 or 2024. And of course, take that with a pinch of salt. result because we're only three races into the new season, but, you know, just to take it for what it's worth. Anyways, just kind of going back to Mercedes here. So James Allison, who's the technical director over at Mercedes, says that the first three races of the year in 2024 have unveiled initial trends on why their car has struggled so much. So that's interesting. It kind of like blends in nicely with what Toto was saying. James Allison had to say, quote, "We are starting to see a pattern emerge that most weekends we have a period in the weekend when we're feeling confident about the car, but then in the pain sessions in qualifying in the race, it slips through our fingers. If we're trying to draw that pattern together, then probably the strongest correlation that we can make at the moment is that our competitiveness drops when the track is warm, when the day is at its warmest, and therefore the tire temperatures rise with those of the track. That gives us some clues about what we need to do as we move forward from here, from F3 to qualifying in Melbourne. There was not a setup change. If you've identified correctly an accurate assessment of why our competitive waxes and wanes, then you can work into the weekend program that is directed towards trying to move towards the temperature and the temperature balance front to rear in your favor, using all the conventional setup tools on the car. That work you can do back here in the factory in the simulation and so on, but if you have to conclude having exhausted the degrees of freedom that you have available to you in setup terms that you still need to go further, well, then that gets harder at that point. That will be that there are underlying characteristics in, say, the aerodynamic map that you've engineered or the suspension characteristic that is aggravating that particular feature. In order to make it heal up nicely, there would have to be a change in those underlying features. It can either be quick and dirty or a little more involved and a bit more complicated," end quote. So there you go. Looks like James Allison, Mercedes technical director, a little bit more forthcoming in information compared to his boss, team principal, Toto Wolff. Anyways, time for a quick break. Going to have a brief message from our sponsors. Going to come back on the flip side. Got some other stories to talk about, including McLaren, talking about Honda, and we'll get into that in just a moment. So please don't go away. Passion, drive, and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights, and more. Whether you're into speed, power, or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
Have you ever experienced turbulence on a flight and wondered why?
And you can see all the terrain around you. You've got no issue with visibility or anything?
No, everything's peachy.
Maybe you've sat on the tarmac for hours wondering why your plane isn't moving.
Well, we're outside here. They're saying the ramp is closed. They won't let us park because of Air Force One.
Listen in on the conversations between pilots and air traffic controllers on the Air Traffic Out of Control podcast.
510 is declaring an emergency. There's smoke in the cabin. I need to make a landing right now on 31 left.
We have the most interesting, wild, and funny ATC recordings you will ever hear. Check out Air Traffic Out of Control wherever you listen to your favorite podcasts.
All right, welcome back to the show. So McLaren team principal Andrea Stella believes that his driver Oscar Piastri has come a long way in developing his race management and has still, what he says, is more improvement to cash in. So that sounds very interesting. So Oscar Piastri, the young Australian driver, has only been in Formula One. Well, this is his second year. So he's come a long way in a fairly short amount of time. And he's become a real familiar figure up towards the front of the grid. Exciting young talent, and has certainly given his teammate Lando Norris a run for his money. So after the first couple of races, Oscar sits fifth in the World Championship with 27 points, which is 9 points ahead of his teammate. Actually, where am I looking at? Yeah, Oscar Piastri, 28 points. Pardon me, I'll correct myself. He's only a point ahead of his teammate. I'd mistaken myself. I was looking at George Russell, who has 18 points, but Oscar and Lando, after three races, only a point separating them. So Oscar Piastri, only 22 years old. He's only got 25 career Grand Prix to his start, but a very impressive 125 points since he his first Grand Prix at the 2023 Bahrain Grand Prix in Sakhir. So, you know, he's gone through karting, gone through Formula 4, GP3, then Formula Renault Euro Cup before going on to F3, and then Formula 2. And, you know, he's gone the long way. I mean, he's put the work in, you know, going all the way back to 2016, thereabouts, when he got into Formula 4 at the UAE Championship, and working his way up there from, you know, from Formula 4 in the Middle East to Formula 4 in Britain, etc. So, you know, he's come a long way. Anyways, going back to what his team boss had to say, and this is Andrea Stella. He said, quote, the race in Australia was very, very good in a delicate situation, even compared to last year in Australia or even Japan, the other places at the other season. We've gone a long way forward. It's extremely encouraging to think that this is only coming at the start of the season. And he went on to say, quote, if you look at how much he has to cash in terms of improvement, I think it looks very strong for the future from Oscar's point of view. In Australia, it was properly complicated. When I talk about adapting, that's not adapting to when a problem starts. This is adapting to prevent the problem to start. You sort of have to understand the context. Oh, this context would lead to this problem. Therefore, the problem actually manifests itself. When you're a rookie, you sort of need to lead into the problem and then realize how you got there. So I think that's the mechanism where he is much more aware that some conditions will lead to more problems. So when he was driving the tires around, I think he was feeling that if you overdo the front tire a little bit, then the tires are not going to be happy from a graining point of view. So you start to understand where the limit potentially, even going 1 kph faster, it's a fine tuning, almost like a self-calibration exercise through experience. So, you know, the long and short of it is that Oscar Piastri, very talented young driver, and his team principal believes that there's a lot more to come from him. Okay, so talking about Honda, but not in the context of Red Bull, but they are set to open a new base in the United Kingdom, and this is going to be, you know, due to their partnership with, you know, supplying Aston Martin with engines from 2026, and this will be a facility that will carry out mainly post-race maintenance on their power units once they partner up officially starting to supply Aston Martin in 2026. So this is where it gets a little bit confusing, because Honda dropped out or withdrew from Formula One at the end of 2021, but they have continued to supply engines to Red Bull and Racing Bulls until the end of 2025, and this is under its Honda Racing Corporation subsidiary, and then Ford and Red Bull have partnered up to create Red Bull powertrains, and then they're going to take it from there after 2025. Anyways, Honda is coming back as an engine supplier with the new formula, the new regs that will go live in 2026. And anyways, they're going to be as a works engine supplier to Aston Martin, and as part of that, they've created a new UK company and will open a factory in the United Kingdom. So it's actually going to be headed up by HRC President Koji Watanabe, who's been with Honda since 1987. He's been a regular in and around the paddock for quite a while. And anyways, there was a statement that was issued earlier this week from the Honda Racing Corporation, and which they said, quote, this new company has been founded to primarily perform post-race maintenance and preparation tasks on the Honda-built F1 power units, whilst also operating as a logistics operation for the European regions. The establishment of HRC UK will further enhance the effectiveness of Honda's PU operations in support of the partnership with Aston Martin F1 team. In May 2023, Honda and Aston Martin F1 jointly announced that they will enter into a works partnership so that Honda will supply its F1 PUs compliant with the new F1 regulations, which will take effect in the 2026 season. End quote. So they're going to get right on it. They're going to not let any grass grow under their feet. HRC UK is going to start recruiting engineers, technicians, and PR staff. Well, basically, right now. So they also have a HRC USA, which is based in California. They're also going to be contributing to the new power unit. And, well, I mean, why not? Because there's five Grand Prix on the calendar currently in North America. You got Canada, you got Mexico City, you got COTA, you got Miami, you got Vegas. And so there's quite a bit there. And anyways, the American branch of the Honda Racing Corporation will really get more involved in their global programs. Watanabe was talking about HRC USA and said the following, quote, a new corporate organization has been established to carry out F1 activities, which is very significant. Until now, our activities have been on projects, gathering people and money, disbanding when the project was over and repeating. However, going forward, we will be responsible for the racing company's activities. Being a company, of course, we have the budget that includes expenses for technological development with an eye to the future, such as sustainable carbon neutral fuels, high performance motors, batteries, and so on. End quote. So very cool to see that that Honda is officially coming back in a works agreement with Aston Martin for 2026. That's not new news, but this new company that they're spinning up, HRC UK, that is literally hiring people at this very moment. So if you have those qualifications, which I'd be very jealous of, maybe somebody listening to the show might get on board. That would be pretty cool. Anyways, that's completely off the topic. So bringing it back around to the next story on the agenda, and let's talk about Carlos Sainz, the Ferrari driver. He's made a lot of headlines over the past couple of months. First of all, he was basically the guy that was best known as losing out to the musical chairs of Formula One when it was announced a couple of months ago that Lewis Hamilton was going to be taking his seat at Ferrari for 2025, and kind of had him looking around for the music to start up again and look for another empty seat to land in. Anyways, he hasn't done himself any harm at all, has he? I mean, he's had a pretty solid start to the season. And he's won a race after only three rounds, so very good for him. But before that, I mean, he withdrew from a race in previously. He didn't race in Saudi Arabia because he had that appendix operation, and his seat was temporarily taken over by 18-year-old Oliver Bierman, who did a wonderful job coming home in seventh in Saudi Arabia to score the points in his very first Formula One race, which was awesome. Anyhow, Sainz came back, still tender from the operation, comes into the Australian Grand Prix last week, had a very strong weekend, and although he really only chased Max for a couple of laps before taking the lead when Max retired with that seized right rear brake, but he had a quiet race more or less at the head of that Grand Prix, leading the rest of the field home. But he had, I think it would have been about 55, 56 laps. So it wasn't like he had a quick cruiser out. I mean, there was plenty of opportunities for his rivals to catch him, for something to happen to the car, or the typical bad Ferrari call from the pit wall, or strategy mistake, or things like that. But they certainly got it all right. Anyways, his teammate Lando Norris said he believes it's silly for people to underrate Carlos Sainz, and they were teammates together at McLaren a couple of years ago. And Carlos is, for one reason or another, has become the number one free agent for Formula One next year. So he it's interesting where he might end up. Anyways, Lando, after talking to the media in the post-race in Australia, said, quote, "You're silly if you underrate him," talking about science. "People know what he's capable of doing, know his effort level, his approach and dedication to wanting to be one of the best, exactly like he's proved today and over the last couple of weeks. I'm sure you have plenty of drivers who probably wouldn't have tried as hard and has dedicated so much of their time and effort trying to recover. For the people who know what he's capable of doing, you would never say he's underrated." So Sainz's current teammate, Charles Leclerc, had a couple of things to say as well. He said, quote, "I think everybody knows Carlos's worth in the paddock. He's one of the highest rated drivers in the paddock. He's been extremely strong every time he was in a Formula One car, and he has showed it multiple times, so I don't think he's underrated. I'm not too worried about his future because I'm sure many team principals are," he doesn't say it, "but for sure they're speaking with him. I'm sure he'll have many opportunities, and he'll just have to make the best choice for his career," end quote. Sainz heard these comments from both Lando and from Charles Leclerc, and he had the following response, saying, quote, "There's some kind words there, but I agree with them. People that maybe don't have an insight and don't know much about the sport, if they want to underrate me, I'm fine with that. I don't care, honestly, but I care about the people that know the sport, that have seen my data, seen how I work, seen my speed. That's the thing I care about, and I don't feel underrated by them," end quote. I think that's a very sober and very, you know, good response. And I would agree. I think that Carlos is a little bit underrated, and I think that he doesn't get the respect that he often deserves. I mean, he's been overshadowed to a degree by his teammates, but let's be completely honest and fair that over the past several years that these two have been teammates, that the car hasn't been the greatest. And I mean, he let himself and the team down, a couple of times here and there. But I mean, he's had a handful of wins, and he's had quite a lot of points. And I think, I'll just check my notes and see exactly how old Carlos Sainz is. I mean, he's getting up there a little bit, at the ripe old age of 29. And I say that completely tongue in cheek, but I mean, he's got the experience now. I mean, his first entry in Formula One was way back in 2015 at the Australian Grand Prix. To date, he's got 188 starts in he's got 185 entries in Formula One. It's 3 wins, 20 podiums, and a wonderful 1,022 and a half points, going back to, I guess, some of that silliness at, Spa a couple of years ago. I mean, he's been around in Formula One. I mean, he was part of the Red Bull Junior team in 2010. He had a young driver's test at Silverstone in July 2013. Then, he spent a couple of years from 2017, driving for Toro Rosso. And then after that, he had a couple of years, 2017 and 2018 at Renault. And from there, he spent 2 seasons, 2019, 2020 at McLaren. And then after that, since the 2021 has been driving for Ferrari. So, he had his first win in 2022 at the British Grand Prix. He had one, of course, last year in Singapore, being the only other driver other than Max Verstappen or Checo Perez, Sergio Perez, win a Grand Prix last year. And then, of course, he won this past weekend in Australia. So I think that's a fair assessment and comment by two drivers, Lando Norris, that is, and Charles Leclerc, his current teammate, that know Carlos Sainz Jr. very, very well. Anyways, Christian Horner, team principal over at Red Bull, says he couldn't rule out making a move to bring Carlos Sainz over to his team. And that's the thing, right? I mean, we've been talking a lot about that second seat for Red Bull, and that like the names that get thrown around there quite a lot are Danny Ricciardo and Yuki Tsunoda. Liam Lawson is, well, I guess Liam Lawson is more mentioned in the breath to get a job at RB. Anyways, I mean, Carlos Sainz, I mean, he absolutely has to be one of those drivers in the mix to be that second driver at Red Bull. And I think that's kind of an interesting one. I mean, he's proven to be very reliable and very quick over the years. And it would be interesting to see what he could do lined up, you know, one-on-one versus Max Verstappen. I think that Max is always going to be the faster of the two drivers, regardless who he's partnered up with at Red Bull or wherever he is. I mean, he could go to Mercedes, as we talked about off the top of the show. He might not be winning races right away as they rebuild that team and, you know, work on building and designing a better, you know, a more capable championship contender. But the point is that I feel that regardless where he is, he'll always be faster than his teammate. I mean, Max is just who that is. But anyhow, I mean, could you imagine you have that that combination of Carlos Sainz and Max Verstappen? That could be a very lethal 1-2 punch, and it could kind of be harkened back to the you know, the Mercedes dominant period of you know, the past decade prior to 2021, when it was Lewis Hamilton and whoever dominating, and you know, it's either Lewis and Nico Rosberg or Lewis and Valtteri Bottas. I mean, gosh, you know, I'd have to do the math to see how many points and podiums and race wins and championships that they racked up over the course of those seven or eight seasons or whatever it was. And I think Carlos Sainz would give them that consistent number two kind of punch at Red Bull. But where it gets really interesting, though, is right, is that what if Max actually does end up going to Mercedes, like all the rumors suggest that he's going to do, and this is something that's going to happen and could happen fairly quickly, that, and depending which rumor you listen to and you know, take it for what it's worth, right? I still think that where there's smoke there's fire, especially with everything that's happened around Red Bull, that you know, perhaps maybe one or both seats at Red Bull are in play for next year. So maybe Max Leave goes to Mercedes. Maybe they bring in Carlos Sainz, but do they stop there? You know, maybe they get to have their cake and eat it too, and decide to replace Sergio Perez with somebody that could be a little bit of an upgrade on him as well. So, anyways, I think it's easy to and fun to talk about. Anyways, Christian Horner was you know. Speculate, or, you know, commented a little bit about Carlos Sainz. He was referring to Carlos Sainz in a recent interview, saying, quote, "I think we want to have feel the best pairing we can in Red Bull Racing, and sometimes you've got to look outside the pool as well. You had a very fast unemployed driver win today's race, so the market is reasonably fluid with certain drivers." He goes on to say, quote, "Look at based on performance like that, you couldn't rule out any possibility out. So I think you just have to, you just want to take the time to decide. Obviously, Checo was compromised today. He had a great start to the season too, so we're not in a desperate rush. Carlos is the only driver that's beaten Red Bull in the last year, so he appears to be our nemesis," end quote. So yeah, I mean, we got to go back and also just remember that despite Max, you know, retiring due to a mechanical issue, his teammate Sergio Perez didn't finish that race either, you know, reportedly due to the damage caused by a visor tear off of all things, affecting the floor of his car. I mean, he really was a non-factor, finishing, what was it, fifth or sixth last weekend. Don't have that one immediately in front of me, but the point was that Max, of course, gets all the gets all the focus for whatever he tends to do, and then his teammate wasn't able to deliver on that day. But of course, we have to keep that with a little bit, keep a little bit in mind that, yeah, he did. I'm just looking at the final race classification here. So Sergio finished top in the top five in P5, behind Piastri, behind Norris, behind Leclerc, and Carlos Sainz. But obviously, if he had problems with his car, I mean, he was 56 seconds behind, you know, Carlos Sainz by the time the checkered flag was waved. But if he was struggling with an issue, then of course, that was going to be a very, very difficult ask of him to stay with the faster cars at the top of the running order there. Anyways, all right, let's take another quick break. I'll come back on the other side. Going to stick with Ferrari and talk about how their fortunes have changed and some of the comments from their team principal, Frédéric Vasseur. Anyways, don't go away. We'll be back in just one moment. Ocean. All right, welcome back. Sticking with Ferrari, Frederick Vasseur, their team principal. I must admit that I feel like after watching the latest drop of Drive to Survive on Netflix about a month ago or whenever that came out just in the last several weeks, that Fred Vasseur is a bit of a hidden gem. I mean, didn't really get too much airtime over the previous, what was it, five seasons? I guess it was season six that came out last month. Anyways, he's a bit of a cheeky guy with a kind of a, you know, quirky sense of humor. I mean, obviously very good at his job. He didn't just kind of walk into that position at Ferrari after they parted way with Mattia Binotto between the 2022 and 2023 seasons. Fred at least was saying that he believes that his drivers are out of what he calls survival mode with the huge steps that the Ferrari has made with car reliability and consistency. Anyways, he says the tire management is the main improvement that the team has managed to achieve compared to last year, rather than the outright speed of the car. Vasseur was saying, quote, "We made a huge step forward, perhaps on the pace of one lap. It's true that we're not nowhere last year on one lap pace, but where we made a huge step, I think, is more in the consistency between the tire, the two compounds, between one stint and the other one. The car is much easier to drive, much easier to read also for our drivers, and by the way, much easier to develop. And it's probably the biggest step that we did compared to last year, to have something that we cannot easily manage, but at least have a good car read, have a good read of the car quite early in the weekend. What is true of last year, the main issue was the fact that the car was very difficult to drive into the race. Then you had to do a step in the pace. You were doing mistakes, damaging the tires, and then it's kind of a negative spiral. This year, it's much easier, I think, for them to read them, to know where there's the limit, and just to stay a little bit below. And we have to go to tire management. It's much, much easier. They are much more under control than they were last year when they were a bit of the survival mode. And by this, you are killing the tires quite quickly," end quote. Yeah, I mean, what more do you have to really add to that? I mean, there's obviously things going in the right direction. And of course, last year was a very, very difficult time for Vasseur to come in. He came in, I believe it was early January, if I remember kind of off the top of my head. It was a very odd time of year when they decided to part ways with Mattia Binotto. So last year, I mean, he was literally, you know, the new guy at Ferrari. He's got the top job. They're halfway between, you know, the one season and the new one. There was going to be very, very little that he could put in terms of input into the design of last year's car. And he was still literally figuring out how the team operated from race to race every single day and every single race weekend. Couldn't have been an easy job, but he's over a year into it now. He's had a chance to take a look and see how the team is run and who's doing what and all those sorts of you know, things that you need to learn. And I always think it's interesting if you go, and I really recommend it, if you get the book Total Competition that was written several years ago now by Ross Brawn and co-authored, I believe it was Adam Parr. I think it was, you know, a very, very interesting job, because I mean, Ross had a fantastic and very, very successful career in Formula One. And basically the way that he summed it up, that every time he took on a new challenge like that, it was basically like a 3-year project. The first year to kind of really get to know what was happening in the team, what the issues were, what they were good at, what they weren't good at, all those things, you know, what do you need to improve and what people do you need to bring in? What sort of, you know, what you need to do to make those changes and identify them all, right? Then Braun would basically went on to describe that year two would be the year where you start making the changes and sort of iterate on those changes and improvements as the year goes on, whereas you'd be into year three is like, now it's really, you know, everything's all set up and you're basically the captain of the ship at that point. That is well and truly your own project, your team. And, you know, I guess you have to sort of live and die by the results at that point. But I think that was very interesting insight. So, I mean, you know, Fred Vasseur, I mean, he's had that initial year under his belt. So he's seen how the team works. He's seen the issues with the car. It's interesting though, that he says that, you know, maybe they don't have the same one lap pace where they did, last year, when, you know, they're, you know, basically at the end of the season, they were saying that they were, you know, on par with Red Bull in terms of pace, but you know there was always some other sort of issue playing them and holding them back. So it's interesting though that you know that he said that top speed, that high end one lap speed, isn't there, but they've made improvements elsewhere. But I think that is interesting though that he says that, you know, they've identified these problems, they've corrected them, they fixed them, and the drivers now that have the confidence in the car, and that must be such relief for Carlos Sainz and Charles Leclerc, knowing that the car, that they have a better car, more reliable and consistent car underneath them, and we're starting to see some fruits of all that labor. So sticking with the Ferrari, just going back to last weekend, at any rate, Charles Leclerc felt that even right from free practice one on Thursday, that they had what they needed to actually win that race. He reckons that both himself and his teammate Carlos Sainz were in a really good spot and had a legit shot to win that race. It's, you know, like right from the very first session. I mean, it, as we were talking about a little bit earlier, obviously we didn't see that showdown between themselves and Red Bull for very long. And we didn't see it the entire race because of course Max retired after two laps and Sergio just struggled after damaging the floor on his car. He was asked about last week and about, you know, what sort of car the SF24, that's this year's Ferrari, is. Charles said, quote, "Oh, it's extremely important. It was been a long time since we had the genuine pace to have Red Bull. I wouldn't say under control because we don't know what the real pace of Max today, but I will say that from FP1, we knew that pole position in the race win were possible because we had very good tire degradation, very good pace. That is a very encouraging sign. However, if you look at the first few races, two of the first few races, they had the upper hand of the race, so we still have a lot of work to do, but that's exactly what we need to do as a team. Whenever we have the opportunity to actually win a race, we need to take it, and this weekend we did it. Carlos did it today on my side, second with the fastest lap, so there are not any more points that we could have got. Looking back at the first three races, there's not one race where we didn't maximize the result, so we need to do that until we get to the car that is consistently better than the Red Bull, especially in the race," end quote. So very, you know, interesting insight from Charles. Sainz, he had a little bit more concise and shorter take on the car last weekend. Carlos had to say, quote, "From lap one, it felt like a race-winning car, and even if the Red Bull was also quick and were on pole, that 1:15 pole lap time and quali wasn't out of reach for us," end quote. So we'll see. I mean, we've got a couple of races now. We're going to be staying in Asia. We're going to be going to Japan, going to China over the next couple of races. So it'll be interesting to see what happens in those couple of races, whether or not the Ferrari can keep that gap to the Red Bulls small, or if they could close it and challenge them moving forward. We'll just have to see, but encouraging stuff from the Scuderia nonetheless. So just talking a little bit now about silly season, Eddie Jordan, former team principal and team owner in Formula One, had some interesting things to say, talking about Lance Stroll, who, according to Eddie, that is, could be caught up negatively or impacted negatively by the silly season if things happen or don't happen. But so Eddie's theory is that if Carlos Sainz doesn't sign with Red Bull for next year, that he believes that Sainz will end up driving for Aston Martin as part of an all-Spanish lineup alongside his childhood hero Fernando Alonso. This is very interesting. So he was speaking on the Formula for Success podcast, and Eddie had to say, quote, "I'm very friendly with his father," so that's Carlos Sainz's father at any rate, "and as soon as that race finished, I sent a note to Carlos Sr., who was there. You saw him hugging and embracing him at the track just under the podium. I dropped him a note, and within sort of 12 hours or so, whatever it took him to read the phone, and he was on the other side of the world. He sent me back a really nice note. I said, look, this is actually a legendary story where the guy gets out of the hospital, has a major operation. Most doctors will tell you that what happened is impossible. I did see him get out of the car, and yes, of course, he was very, very careful how he got out of the car. For sure, he was in pain during that race, but I think the determination inside the head and what his father would have said to him as he went through that moment to get to the race, signs for me, he livened up my day. I loved watching the Grand Prix. I loved the fact that he could control it. He moved ahead from Leclerc and heard one of the commentators saying, do you think that Ferrari should allow Leclerc to pass? And the answer, my God, don't even ever do something like that, because this was his race win. He's looking for the best seat he can get. And at the moment, please remember that he started off in Toro Rosso, and I would say Red Bull, if they were to lose somebody like Max, or if they were to replace somebody like Perez, you would have to say that Carlos would be one of those key people. However, do not be surprised if you see an all-Spanish Aston Martin team next year. Bear that in mind where we heard it first, okay? Log that down and move on, end quote. So, interesting. I think that that Eddie Jordan is dropping a little bit of insider knowledge, or, you know, claims that maybe is, because, I mean, he talked about at the beginning of that quote that that he'd been trading or texting Carlos Sainz Sr., so maybe he's got a bit of an inside track. But that is interesting, right? Like, if it was to be Sainz and Fernando Alonso at Aston Martin, I mean, is Lance Stroll's time in Formula One up? Who knows, right? I mean, he's never really been able to deliver on all the opportunities that have been presented there for him by his father, you know, Lawrence Stroll. And I mean, you look at where Lance is right now in the Drivers' Championship. I should just bring it up here somewhere if I can. Yeah, here it is. So after three races, Lance Stroll in the Constructors' Championship, Mark. What are you talking about? in the Drivers' Championship. So he had a P10 in Bahrain, retired in Saudi Arabia. He crashed and had a DNF there. Was a P6 in Australia. So he's currently ninth with 9 points. So it's only 7 points behind his teammate, Fernando, who hasn't had, they haven't really been anything too exciting, you know, the first three races of the year compared to what Fernando was doing last year. I mean, Fernando's at a P9, a P5, and a P8 in the first three races. But, you know, I guess where it gets interesting is that, you know, like I say, Eddie's saying that, you know, don't be surprised that if Sainz doesn't go to Red Bull or Mercedes, that he'll end up partnering Fernando Alonso at Aston Martin next year. I mean, Fernando's also been linked with some of these other potential empty seats as well. So, you know, take that with a pinch of salt. It's just say interesting to speculate about because many people have, you know, wondered and said out loud for a long time that Lance's time, or he's living on borrowed time in Formula One. Anyway, he said the other person that's always linked to Red Bull is Danny Ricciardo, who says he's not going to be distracted by what he calls negative stuff that he hears in the Formula One paddock. Just about his future with RB, not you know, let alone the potential to move back to Red Bull next year. You know, there's been some talk that perhaps there's been an ultimatum leveled, that if he doesn't sort himself out, that he's going to be out and Liam Lawson will be back into that car, very, very soon. Danny Rick said that he's not paying attention to that sort of gossip and rumoring at, to any degree. He said, quote, I came into this weekend really honestly deep down believing like we were going to have a very, very good weekend. In terms of the noise people tell me, like in the media, they're like, oh, so-and-so said, I've heard it. It's the first I've heard. It's obviously no disrespect to you guys, but I know that I'm on this kind of little process or journey at the moment, and I just need to focus on myself. And I think that if I let any of the noise get in, it's going to kind of distract me from the path I'm on. I haven't let any of that negative stuff creep in. I didn't expect to start to the season like this. Budapest last year, I drove the car a day before, and then I outqualify Yuki and have really strong pace and with no knowledge. And then having a full preseason and all that on all the races last year, I honestly thought that this year would be a lot, we would start a lot stronger. So there's that, which I don't understand, not only me, but a few people that are wondering why. I think that the important thing is that I stay on course. It's not my head is filled with nonsense or anything. I honestly feel good. And just unfortunately, the results haven't made me feel awesome, but deep down behind the wheel, I do feel good and excited and just want to keep racing. And I'm sure I'll find out a bit more myself. And I still believe maybe we'll find a little something on the car," end quote. So this is interesting. This is compared to an interview given by Formula One driver and very briefly a team principal, Christian Albers, who was on the Telegraaf's podcast in the Netherlands. He was not very flattering towards Danny Ricciardo. He said, his words precisely were, quote, "What irritates me a little bit is that he just keeps laughing and doing activities around driving. Just focus on the racing. Only then can you start being funny again. As a driver, you want to go into hiding until you've beaten the rest, and then you can just show yourself again. With him, it is the other way around. All those activities are just painful," end quote. I don't know. Take that with a pinch of salt. I mean, I think everybody's different. I mean, we had Stuart Bell on the show a couple of weeks ago. I mean, he knows Danny Ricciardo, at least from a media point of view, as well as anyone else. I mean, he's interviewed him many, many times and knows what Dan is all about. And he says that the Ricciardo we see is the Ricciardo you see all the time everywhere. And, you know, like I find a bit of a, you know, I don't know what the point of this, you know, this comment is, because, you know, he's saying that he's laughing and doing activities around, you know, all these other activities and things like that. It's just focus on the racing, you know, like that's fine. But these drivers have tons of like responsibilities and duties to do in terms of media and, you know, sponsor events and commitments at the track for like fan engagement and stuff like that. And, you know, to suggest that's, you know, he's getting he's saying that, I guess that could be a distraction, fair enough, but you know, there's no way he can completely disassociate himself and just never come out of the team trailer, never come out of his hotel room, or you know, he just can't focus 100% on driving all of the time. It's just absolutely impossible in this day and age. So, you know, this is a guy that, you know, Albers, I mean, he raced, raced from about 2005 to 2007. He had a handful of points. Very briefly, the, you know, team principal, I guess it was a Manor back in, or Caterham, I think it was, in 2014 before they went into, into bankruptcy. So, I mean, I guess what I'm trying to say about Christian Albers is I think he should know, you know, a bit more about what these guys, these drivers have to do at the top level. You know, it's not just solely about what's happening in the car, solely with the car. There's too much around there. So I don't know. I just find that a bit of a stupid comment, to be quite honest. But anyways, let's a couple more stories here. Just going to go back to Aston Martin before the end of the race. So Dastardly Tricks versus Racing. So this is a story written by Michelle Foster over at planetf1.com. So Damon Hill, the 1996 Formula One World Champion, was on the F1 Nation podcast this week and was talking about the penalty that Fernando was given, the 22nd penalty, which dropped him down to P8th in Australia last weekend for his role in that accident that brought out the VSC at the end of the race and had poor old George Russell in a very dangerous and precarious place after he went off the track and put it into the wall. And Fernando, the telemetry showed that he slowed about 100 meters earlier than usual before going into that corner, and then George lost downforce, wasn't expecting it, you know, goes off the track into the tire wall, and then pops up and slides across the track and then ends up in the middle of the track on the side of the car. Anyways, after the race was over, Fernando was, who's almost got 400 Grand Prix to his name in that over 20-year career, he was given that penalty after the stewards looked at it. He took to writing on X, because we all get on social media to vent and share our lives, basically. Anyways, Fernando wrote after the race on X, quote, "A bit surprised surprised by the penalty at the end of the race regarding how we should approach the corners or how we should drive the cars. At no point do we want to do anything wrong at these speeds. In F1, with over 20 years of experience with duels like Imola 2005, 2006, Brazil 2023, changing racing lines, sacrificing entry speed to have good exits from corners is part of the art of motorsport. We never drive 100% of every lap and every corner. We save fuel, tires, brakes, so being responsible for not making every lap the same is a bit surprising. Damon Hill actually agrees with Fernando and suggesting or saying that Fernando being banned from doing the unexpected or what he called gamesmanship goes against what motor racing is all about. The quote from Damon is as follows. George got surprised. It looked to me that he was very surprised to find the closing speed to Fernando to be so great, or he just got too close. He was pushing too hard and got understeer because he was under his rear gearbox. I do think this is where we get into the difficult area of what racing is and what is dastardly tricks. I think you have to assume that the FIA want to stop people doing things that are potentially dangerous, but then it is dangerous. Motor racing is dangerous. You have to be careful when you're going to make a move on someone. If you're closing on them, you've got to be prepared for them to do things that are gamesmanship. I just think that has to be a part of the sport, being wary of an individual because they've got form or they're clever or whatever. I just think that the idea that you've got to stop people from doing anything unexpected, that's not really racing, end quote. So Damon Hill wasn't the only person speaking out against this or speaking in support of Fernando Alonso. So this next person is a Spanish FIA official, and his name is Joaquin Verdegue. And so, I mean, there's a bit of Homerism going on here. I mean, obviously, you know, Verdegue is Spanish, Fernando is Spanish, so he's standing up for his boy, obviously. But anyways, fair enough. I mean, everybody's entitled to their opinion. So he was very critical of the penalty that Fernando got at the Australian Grand Prix, and basically said that there's a lack of consistency in decisions. So he was talking to soymotor.com, Joaquin Verdegue, that is. He said, quote, "If regulating a sport is usually complex, regulating motor racing is tremendously complex. And unfortunately, that line that separates legality from illegality has so many nuances that is particularly difficult to know where you are and which rule to apply at any given moment. This sport is particularly complicated, and situations like this one show it. The problem is, at the end of the season, apparently identical events end up being penalized radically differently, unjustly different, either because there have been some exaggeratedly soft with one or exaggeratedly hard with the other, because the same thing, logically, should be punished with the same penalty. If I give my personal opinion, I don't like the penalty given to Fernando. Personally, I think it is fair and excessive. If I read the reports of the stewards who imposed it, what I've just said would change my disagreement would be only from the technical point of view. Why? Because the stewards have had on the table and have analyzed the telemetry of Russell and Alonso's car. They have spoken to both drivers. They have spoken to the witnesses. They have a lot of elements of judgments, and their opinion is more formed. The stewards' ruling states that Alonso is entitled to try and take a different approach to the corners, something he is entitled to do in order to make it more difficult for the chaser to overtake. The ruling also states that Alonso is not responsible for the dirty air that caused Russell's accident. The dirty air, whether Alonso is braking or not, is something he cannot avoid. So from my technical and legal point of view, this ruling shows that there is no causal link. What Alonso does, he can do, and if he is not responsible for the dirty air, he is not responsible for any punishable conduct. The stewards consider that this is not a mistake, but that Alonso was driving this way to make it difficult for Russell to overtake. So where is the limit? Alonso just doesn't brake. He lifts. He touches the brake with his foot, but the reduction in speed resulting from this is less than the lifting off the foot of his accelerator. It is a minimal reduction. Here I wonder where the limit is. You have to be very clear about it. 1% speed loss is okay, but 2% is exaggerated. This line is not written, and here we are not talking about legality, but about justice. I witnessed the worst brake test ever, which took place in Australia. It was done by Ralf Schumacher to Jacques Villeneuve, and it ended in the worst possible way, with an official being killed by a tire impact. A brake test can kill people, and Alonso's was not one. I don't know where the line is. I don't think the penalty is fair. end quote. All right. Well, we're going to wrap it up right there. Thank you all for joining in this week and listening to the podcast. We have the week off. There's no race until next weekend, and then we'll have another week break in between Japan and China. So we're going to have a chance just to relax here and, you know, fairly hectic start to the first couple of races of the season. So nice to have a bit of a breather here and there and not pulling back-to-back weekends for the next, not for a little while anyways. All right. Well, thank you again. Like I say, if you want to support the show here, by all means, please do. Really appreciate it. If you can head on over to Apple Podcasts or Spotify or wherever you enjoy and listen your podcast to, you could leave a 5-star rating and a review there. And we've got a nice one here from Gem Walk in Australia on Apple Podcasts. Left a nice 5-star rating saying, if F1 was a religion, then this podcast would be my weekly devotion. So seems somewhat appropriate at this time of year with so many different religious traditions celebrating and observing many different things. So thank you very much for that kind review, Gem Walk. Really appreciate that. And that is the quickest and easiest way to help support this show. It doesn't cost you anything in terms of money. That is just a few moments of your time. If you want to follow me, go over onto X and give me a follow at Scuderia F1 Pod. If you've got something that's a little bit lengthier, or maybe you just prefer typing out the old emails compared to replying and posting on X, you can send an email at scuderiaf1pod@gmail.com. All right, that is it for me tonight. Thank you all and have a great weekend. Enjoy the long weekend wherever you may be, if it's a long weekend. If not, hopefully there's a long weekend coming up. Hopefully you'll get a chance to spend some time, regardless where you are, with those who are nearest and dearest to you. And that's it. That's a wrap. Be back again soon. Bye for now.